Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me, Kevin Stevenson, on I Don't Care with, me, Kevin Stevenson. So today's guest is Jonathan Jerisho. Jonathan is the founder, president, CEO, probably everything, bottle washer, trash guy at Omnichannel Health in New York. So, Jonathan, welcome to I Don't Care, and look forward to talking to you.
No, I'm particularly attracted by the title because it's my my 4-year-old granddaughter's favorite thing to say.
I don't care.
Yeah. Right?
Boy, every now and then I let people know how the name came about. Just one of my producers came up with it. He called me one night and said, "Hey, I got an idea for the podcast name." I said, "What is it?" He said, "Well, you don't provide direct patient care, right?" And I said, "Of course not." I said, "Patients are probably really happy about that." And he said, "How about I don't care?" I said, "Perfect." So there we go.
Yeah.
So Jonathan, I've been creeping a little bit on you on the internet, as one is wont to do.
Right.
You got a really interesting story. So tell me a little bit about, you went to Harvard. I went to the Harvard of the South, Baylor University.
Yes.
But I'd love to hear what happened after Harvard, how you got into healthcare and all that.
Yeah, so it's an interesting it's an interesting journey. At least it is for me. My wife gets bored and others, but since you asked, I actually started out as a pre-med at Harvard undergrad, and my plan was to be a doctor. So I actually after college I went for a fellowship. I had a fellowship to go to Hebrew University in Israel, and I had a lot of time to think there. And philosophize. And when I came back, I wasn't sure, did I want to be a doctor or did I want to pursue other things? I had a double major in sort of pre-med major called history of science and double major in Near Eastern languages and civilization. So I was torn between two different lives. So I decided to go work for Eli Lilly for a couple of years in sales. Okay. Working with doctors, and I decided pretty quickly that I didn't want to be a doctor because every single one of them, this is in the early 90s, said, "Don't be a doctor. Socialized medicine's coming."
Right.
So I got a little scared off, I'd say, and Lilly paid for business school. So while I was in business school, I came up with some different ideas about different things, and I eventually came up with an idea for a diabetes magazine. A lot of doctors, when I would go into a lot of personnel when I would go into hospital would say, "Well, you work for Lilly. Wow, I have a lot of diabetic patients. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could get some recipe books or something like that." And even though I wasn't involved in that field necessarily, it gave me an idea that eventually germinated and grew. And I started what became at first, it was a niche diabetes magazine in the 90s when type 1 diabetes was pretty much what there was when you spoke about diabetes.
Okay.
With the introduction of glucophage in the mid 90s, things all changed. All of a sudden, type 2, everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it was a new world, direct to consumer advertising. My magazine went from this little niche magazine in some pharmacies to the nation's largest diabetes magazine. And over 20 years, we published over 100 million magazines. So that was my start in healthcare. Unfortunately, the internet brought about changes to every industry, and and for publishing, it meant the demise of my magazine for the most part, because really wasn't a profitable venture to take my magazine online. I did have some media properties, but eventually I pivoted. I did know a lot of nurses and diabetes educators because like Walgreens in particular, they would have me send about, I don't know, about 10% of the magazines to diabetes centers nationwide at hospitals. So pretty much anywhere with a diabetes center or a juvenile diabetes Foundation site as well, or a lot of hospitals are affiliated with them, or American Diabetes. So we had this broad presence at hospitals, and I knew all these CDEs. And eventually, I made a pivot into supplying hospitals with hard-to-find medical products, which is where I am now. And that really helped to facilitate that. I knew a lot of people. I mean, we're talking about thousands of nurses and diabetes educators nationwide. And now it's been a few years that I've been in this industry. And, you know, we had a niche diabetes magazine. Now we have a niche business. We're small business, went from the biggest diabetes magazine in the country to an SBA certified small business.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about that, because that's a big change.
Yeah.
But it's really an interesting pivot into supply chain. So, I want to hear more about this.
Well, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing, I never really thought about it when I was a publisher. You really do everything. You're the last person to take a look at any magazine that goes out. So I became a de facto editor, writer, and then sold all the advertising. I had some help, but essentially that's the biggest thing a publisher does, at least in a small publishing company. I had people handle logistics for me, but we were basically working through these different chains, whether it was Walgreens or Walmart, or in the case of Costco, we actually used UPS to ship to their store. They didn't go centralized, but every retailer, Kroger, Albertsons, Safeway, I knew the insides and outsides of all these different supply chains, how to supply them, where to supply them, how to get things done right, and some of by trial and error. So I had a very good record of being able to take something from start to finish and then get it delivered and all the follow-up that was involved. So I saw a lot of parallels when I started to get more involved in different aspects of medical supply chain. And, there were a lot of parallels, and I guess I was a little ahead in the learning curve just having this experience, but, what I really found and it continues to be true now is I really just look for where are the opportunities, where are the niches, what's not being filled. And that's continually where I gravitate, again, especially as a small company, that's what we're looking to fill.
Okay. Well, I like how you describe your business as a supply disruption navigator.
Yeah.
So are you focused in just one area, or are you just like, hey, are you contacting hospitals and say, what are you having a hard time filling? What do you constantly see on back order?
Right.
How do you decide? Because, we're buying so many different things across, all sorts of different arenas,
right,
all day long. Right. And, that could get real cumbersome. And if you're trying to stay, niche small business, how do you decide?
So it's a fundamental question. And, when we started, the initial goal was, let's just try to find where the needs are. Obviously during COVID, the needs were very dramatically different from where they are now. I mean, COVID was just a really difficult time for hospitals and for us. What we look to do is, where's the opportunity where we can be a resource where others aren't? So during COVID, what we focused on mostly was syringes. Because if you recall, there was a big transition, or I should say there was a big need when the COVID shots came out. They came out with a 3 ml syringe. Most folks found that the 1 ml syringe worked better for their needs. There was less waste. So there was a big run on the 1 ml syringes. So hospitals were scrambling all over the country. One of the hospitals I was closest with was BILH, Beth Israel Lahey Health now in Boston. I had some initial contacts there. I had some trust because they're a Harvard-affiliated hospital. And they said, you know, I had helped them out with some things during COVID. And they said, Jonathan, hey, we can't get syringes. BD can't get them. You were in the diabetes business. You must know people with syringes. And sure enough, I was like, yeah, I do. I went back to some of these folks that I'd met at American Diabetes Association conference, and there's something called AADE. They changed their name now, Diabetes Educators Conference. Mm-hmm. Went to there was manufacturers in Europe, not really China. China was, we did a little bit in China, but it was mostly folks that were just under the radar. We had a company called Dynarex. Dynarex is based in New York, and they're just like kind of a second, third, maybe even fourth tier private label supplier. We bought out their entire warehouses for the 1 ml syringes. There was another company, I forget the exact name. Some of the names have changed, but a small Midwestern company that sold a lot to diabetes mail order companies, and we did work with them. When we worked with retail pharmacies, we also worked with some mail order related businesses as well. So I went back to my online Rolodex, LinkedIn, got in touch with lots of people. And, you know, that's really where we made a distinction where, BILH and others, Lehigh Valley, and there were we were supplying them with all the syringes they need. And then it became Vacutainers. And even though Vacutainers certainly wasn't my expertise, I knew, we had created a network, and continued to create our network and expand our network for finding hard to find items. So that's pretty much where we started, and we've evolved to a little bit past that now.
Okay. So now we're past COVID. And so, I think we've got syringes under control. So now,
surprisingly, they're back again.
Really?
Yeah. I get every single day, I get a request for BD syringes.
No kidding. Huh. Well, I guess we're fortunate then. So,
yes, you are.
So what are some of the items that you're outside of syringes,
right,
that you're hearing about most often that are so hard to get, or that they're constantly on back order?
Right. Well, I recently joined. Are you familiar with ARM, AHRMM, part of the American Hospital Association?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So ARM, they're led by someone named Mike Schiller, and Mike started something called the ARM Supply Chain Resource Council, I guess a couple of years ago. And I got onto it recently, and every couple of weeks they have a meeting and they talk through what some of the current disruptions are. So that's, and that's a really valuable resource for hospitals. There's a lot of hospital leaders. I'm sure many of them, there, they have heads of supply chain and other folks too, from manufacturers, suppliers. I started something on LinkedIn. I found a little niche myself and call it Hospital Supply Chain Resilience Leader. So it's about 600 people on LinkedIn who can reach out. A lot of thought leaders post content, but it's a good place to network. And it's a non-denominational, non-organizational place for people in supply chain just to coexist. And there's a bunch of these resilience councils that I either follow or I get the emails from. So I try to stay up to date since this is my business. But believe it or not, the best source for knowing where the disruptions is coming from is from the hospitals. We work with so many hospitals. We know what the requests are that are coming in. And then on our site, omnichannelhealth.com, there's a sourcing section. And every week we update what we've been sourcing. So anyone can look on there anywhere in the country and they can see, what are the back-ordered flavors of the month? And it's a lot of brand name products, BD products. You'll even see syringes, 3M products. Look, I'm not going to get into the business side of things so much, but I was recently on it. It's called AVAP. It's the Value Analysis Organization. I was in one of their disruption conferences, and they were just talking about disruptions, and basically, I never heard it so clearly. But they were just like, "Hey, we hate substitutes. Hate substitutes. Like, not, you know, yeah, we have approved subs and whatever, but we hate them and our clinical staff hates them. And so I started to talk to people about it, like kryptonite. And they're like, yeah, it's kryptonite. It's not just a headache, it's kryptonite. So we basically provide a service. It's like, look, if your nurses and your staff is saying, I understand you have the subs, but we don't want them, find the original somehow. So that's really our specialty. We're small enough that we can just focus on that niche. We have great suppliers. We have a lot of overstock buyers that are underneath the radar. They work on Excel files. They're not uploading their stuff to the website. And so, you know, just today I had probably 20 hospitals reach out, and, you know, we're almost as good as Texas hitters. We hit about 400 to 500.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at your list today.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating, the breadth that you go into.
Right.
So I guess I'm still trying to figure out, do you work directly with the hospitals? Do you have a contract with the hospitals?
Yeah.
Where like, okay, I heard you mention Beth Israel.
Yeah.
So does Beth Israel just contract with you and say, hey, Jonathan, we've got this list of difficult things to find. Go find it.
So I've been married for almost 31 years now. So I'm like, I'm in that contract for life. And it's like, So other than that contract, I try to keep things simple. We don't we're no cost and no commitment. People, we want them to reach out to us for whatever they need, and then we negotiate things on a product by product basis. Now, sometimes hospitals will say to us, okay, we're doing a large order, whatever else, and then there's terms obviously in a PO. So you know, PO is really the contract.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and I was thinking that, okay, I could see you being attached to a hospital in some form or fashion,
right.
Or I could see the other way where you go out and you're like, hey, I hear that I'm looking right here, like Globe Scientific 1505 culture tube, 5 milliliter. Okay. Whenever you find, okay, those are a little scarce. I'm seeing that a lot. Do you go out and buy a lot of those and say, hey, hospitals A, B, and C, I've got these available?
So one of the things that I always loved about my publishing company was that we were small and nimble. And even though I was publishing for the largest chains in the country, I outsourced every type of thing that I could. I outsourced graphic design before it was fashionable. I mean, I had in-house designers, but I all my printing was in-house. I never bought printing equipment or anything like that. And now I kind of have adopted the same model in order to stay nimble, where we have 3PL warehouses. We have dozens of trusted suppliers that do drop shipping from us from all over the country to get things quicker. But we don't hold inventory. There's a few items that we'll hold, you know, for a very short time.
Okay.
But in general, it's cross-docking. It comes into us and it goes out. So we're not opportunistic in that way. We usually do things like, we do have some standing orders, but that's the exception, not the rule.
Okay. Yeah. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So what are you seeing? You know, we've already talked about syringes, but what do you see now most often, you know, that people are popping up and saying, hey, Jonathan, I'm having a real hard time with this.
Right. Well, the biggest problem now is another BD problem. It's BACTEC, which is a laboratory item. So everyone in the world needs them. A lot of big hospitals, like I was on some supply disruption calls, one recently, where it's like everyone was talking about BACTEC. So some of the bigger systems, and probably including some of the ones that yours and others you're involved, they're taken care of, and that's understandable. But pretty much everyone else, other than the let's call them the outliers, you know, needs these products, and BD has a production shortage. The FDA is involved. Everyone's involved. But the long and short of it is these hospitals are struggling and no one can do anything about it. So that's, but that's not our business in general. It's not the items that no one can get. So the items that we can get that have been either discontinued or have threatened discontinuation, like there's some Cardinal products, some Kangaroo pumps. There's big hospital systems that have been calling us for the last several weeks. Can you still get them, Jonathan? Can you still get them? And so we do work with some suppliers that did keep extra inventory of some of these products because they knew they would need them. So we still, until now, are still supplying Kangaroo pumps, BD syringes every single day for the last several weeks. Now, I'm not saying massive quantities, but we have a California hospital, well-respected community hospital. They can't, you know, I think they're a Medline company. So again, to Medline, but we have our secondary distributors and we have a network of folks that do keep supply of these. And now the other thing is this, we work with some great companies that buy hospital overstock. And so they'll buy product and it maybe only has 6 months left on it till it expires, sometimes a little more. But if it's a time like now where people need it and they're going to use it quickly, it's not really an issue. But but that's also, you know, I didn't really mention that, but a lot of times folks are just like, how did you get this? This doesn't exist. And we say, you're right. It doesn't exist, but we went back in time.
There you go. Well, I mean, this is just, I mean, it's really interesting. You're like, I'm trying to figure out a parallel. You know, you're like that guy, you know, you almost go, you know, kind of garage sailing a little bit.
Or eBay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
Well, and I'm looking at your testimonials and these are all systems that all of us know.
Right.
You've got a great customer base.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, there's more on LinkedIn. We're redoing our site actually because we have a lot more testimonials. But yeah, and we actually got more involved. It's a funny thing because you said our business model. It's not like Jonathan had some great idea. It's like, oh, I'm gonna do. No, I mean, we just look at where the opportunities are and we continue to fill the need. So for the John Rafferty, who just retired from Lehigh Valley Health, well-respected professional, who's the head of administration for supply chain. John moved from Garnett, which is in New York, right near where I live, and we had done some work together. He moved to Lehigh Valley. As soon as he got there, he started calling me. And then all of a sudden, he's like, okay, Jonathan, we need Ligasure. Ligasure is on back order. We can't get them anywhere. You need to get them. I'm like, John, I don't know. He's like, no, find them.
Find them. I don't care.
And he's like, yeah, we need them tomorrow. I said, John, I haven't done surgical with you guys yet. Whatever. And then very short, I had my network. I knew there were folks that had them. I just didn't know. So Ligasure has many years of, unlike some other products, the Ligasure has had several years left on expiration date. And there was a lot of folks that I knew, not just in New York, but all around the country who had supply. And we were able to supply Lehigh Valley all throughout. We supplied Banner Health all throughout the Ligasure back orders. And then guess what happened? There was a Covidian back order. And so we were prepared for that. All of a sudden we were involved in surgical supplies. And now that things calm down, you know, it's not the back order season. Now you have the supply and demand dynamic. So now we're able to sell Ligasure, Ethicon, and like Intuitive, Da Vinci Reload, far less than contract pricing.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Jonathan, in the few minutes we've got left, any final words of wisdom or any supply chain knowledge that you want to pass along to my audience?
I feel a little funny trying to impart wisdom to someone who's been doing this so long, but because you're part of the Ascension system, and obviously as such, you know, there are certain values and wisdom literature that I'm sure is important in the life of those that are involved in your system. Mm-hmm. So I recently gave a talk at a local ARM meeting in Ohio, and I tried to be, as educational as I could. And one of my favorite pieces of wisdom literature comes from Proverbs. And mm-hmm. in Proverbs, it talks about the righteous will fall seven times and get up, right? And I said, what a fantastic descriptor for supply chain, right? Mm-hmm. Thing, supply chain resilience. But I said, here you have, you know, Solomon, the wisest of all men, in Proverbs, talking about falling and getting up. And it's just, but it's seven times, you know, it's like, it's, you have to prepare yourself for it. You have to build your resilience muscles. And so mm-hmm. what I actually said, I heard this and I kind of incorporated in into this thought that it's not just that the person falls and gets back up. It's that while he's falling, he's already focusing on getting back. So that the falling is the getting up is already part of the falling down. So it's really not failing, it's falling. Mm-hmm. So there's no failure there. It's, you shouldn't be afraid to fall because you know you're going to get back up. You've done it before. You got through this crisis. You got through the other. And so I also think sometimes about Rocky, right? Rocky.
Well, of course.
To get knocked down, but you see him, he's on the ropes, wouldn't go down and pulls himself up. So I like to think of ourselves as, you know, a couple of different, we're like Rocky, we're like Superman avoiding kryptonite. We got lots of superheroes to look to, but yeah, the supply chain people are heroes wherever they are. And, you know, we got to use our special powers and we got to build our resilience muscles.
Boy, I love that because you're so right. Without our supply chain folks, we're dead in the water. So Jonathan Jereshow from Omnichannel Health, thanks so much for joining me today on I Don't Care. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for your time and allowing me to share a little bit about myself and what a great forum.
Well, I appreciate that. Take care. Well, that's it for today's episode of I Don't Care with me, Kevin Stevenson. I thank you for joining me and we will see you again next week. Take care.
Be well. Thank you.